Welcome to the Phoenix Cast, a podcast about cybersecurity, technology, and innovation issues in the military. We are your hosts, John.
And Kyle.
I'm a U.S. Marine, and the opinions expressed on the cast are my own, not official military policy.
And the opinions expressed by me are also my own, not those of my employer or any other businesses I happen to be associated with.
This is a very special reaction cast.
Oh, yeah.
We are here in Austin, Texas, during South by Southwest.
It's hot.
It is hot. And we just heard a huge announcement. To cover all of this, we've got friend of the cast and Marine Corps Software Factory Director, Lieutenant Colonel Charlie Bach. Charlie, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So minutes ago, Lieutenant General Glavey, the Marine Corps Commandant for Information, took the stage with Lieutenant General Todd from Army Futures Command and Will Granis, VP and CTO from Google Cloud.
Yeah, Google Cloud.
To announce the Marine Corps is partnering with the Army Software Factory to launch the Marine Corps Software Factory.
That's a lot of stuff, John.
That is a lot of stuff. So, Kyle, tell us what this all is looking like.
Okay, so we're going to bring you up to speed here. And you may notice the audio may sound a little different today because we are, and this is a big deal, I can't stress this enough, this is the first time that John and I have been in the same room together in many years. We flew out here to Austin to cover this. We're in the room with Charlie. We're all doing this together right now in real time. So it's a little echoey because we stole a room at South by Southwest. And anyone who's ever been to South by Southwest may know that is an incredibly big accomplishment that we're very proud of. And coming here, we just went and walked this morning through the Army Software Factory, took a tour, met a ton of incredibly talented, amazing people who are over there doing really amazing things, and have met with tons of folks from the Marine Corps Software Factory side of this things in preparation for this really monumental event. So we're here to talk about it. That's sort of the basics of this. We're going to start by covering a bunch of facts of the live announcement that just happened. So we had two generals, one from the Marine Corps, one from the Army, in a room with Will Granis, announcing this thing live. And so we took a bunch of notes. We're going to run through a few of those. And Charlie, we're putting you on the spot here. So we're going to take some of these facts. We're going to kick them over to you for official comment, Mr. Director. And then from there, we took a bunch of opinionated notes at the end, too, from John and I. We'll just run through that if that works for everybody.
Have your nerd levels come down enough for us to start this?
I think so.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Here we go. So first thing I took away, the Marine Corps Software Factory will be located in Austin, Texas, and co-located with the Army Software Factory. So we are not just partnering with the Army Software Factory and doing this out of Quantico, Virginia. We are doing this live from Austin with Marines.
Yeah. Hey, this is a tremendous opportunity. It really is. I visited this venue a couple of years ago. It was about 2 weeks after General Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, personally cut the ribbon on the facility. And immediately knew that this was a capability that the Marine Corps just had to have. But because we're so resource constrained and very small, but also the fact that the Army has done a tremendous amount of work in this area, the quickest way to operationalize this capability and bring it into the service was just to move in with them. So under the leadership of now Major General Malik and Major General Matos, and as well as Lieutenant General Glavey, we've struck up a formal agreement to be able to leverage everything from their facilities to their tools, their training, their production resources to be able to serve as an accelerant to bring this capability into the service. So pretty cool.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about the details there. Kyle, next point.
Next point. So this announcement is for a 3-year trial, as it was described. So we got to ask the very obvious question, Charlie. Is this like leasing with an option to buy? Is this a giant experiment? What's our confidence levels?
And is this a PCS?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Are we PCSing people here? Is it TAD?
We are. Okay. It's considered a 3-year pilot. And during that 3-year pilot, we're on a learning campaign. We are a learning organization. Just like General Todd said, if we're not a learning organization, we're failing. But to answer your question, yes, we are PCSing Marines here. The first 6 of the first cohort will move here this summer and immediately get to work in terms of producing a modern software solution for the tactical edge.
And for the listeners who may not be aware of this, having Marines stationed in Austin working in a software factory is a lot of words that have never existed in the same sentence before. There is no large military presence in Austin by default. Super bold and awesome move by the Army to establish the center here, and the Marine Corps establishing the center here for the same reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. If you were here on the ground, the fascinating part about all of this is that the facility, number one, is not on a military base, but it is in the center of all of the major industry leaders, where we can take advantage of and leverage partnerships with the tech giants. You know, everyone knows that Austin is considered the second, you know, Silicon Valley of the nation. And the Army has done a tremendous job in enforcing those relationships that we can just fall in on and leverage.
So we get to take advantage of a sweet location, a system slash ecosystem that already exists, and leverage a partner experience that's already been built. By the way, built for, obviously the Army is doing different things than the Marine Corps, but built in a very similar structure. Sounds like reducing reworked. Okay, so my next bullet that I took away here is the Marine Corps and the Army are the first team to come together and make a joint modern software development effort. That is pretty cool. Charlie, what makes this joint?
Yeah, great question, John. So so technically we're not. You know, in order to use the term joint in the title, you know, we got to be pulling some resources from the DoD level, which is not outside the realm of the possible at this point. The DoD level is incredibly interested in the wonderful work that the Army has started, and especially with the strategic partnership between the Marine Corps and the Army, their attention has grown. You know, back in 2019, the Defense Innovation Board published a landmark study on software development. It recommended that each service have something like this, an organic software development capability that specifically addresses each need that is unique to the service. And I believe that, you know, and I took some time to get caught up on some of the episodes previously to this, and you guys have been talking about this for years.
Yeah, we've been talking about it for quite a long time. I think we talked about Marine One and Kessel Run, and, you know, the ability and the capability to develop software internally to service is something we've always been pretty bullish on.
Yes, absolutely. And we are absolutely jazzed to see this coming together.
Oh, yeah.
Kyle, you got the next question.
All right. So I'm going to take a direct quote here really quick from the announcement, which is that Marines will spend 3 months learning software development fundamentals, followed by 8 months pairing one-on-one with a Silicon Valley subject matter expert working on software solutions. Following one-to-one pairing, Marines will spend 24 months in a utilization tour building Marine Corps software solutions. So that's end of the quote. But Charlie, so what's the expectation here for people coming in on this? Do folks come here already knowing, are they already coding ninjas? Are they just kind of good? Or do they just have like two bags packed and a, you know, great attitude and 31 pieces of flair?
That's a good question too. So, okay, when you are assigned to the Marine Corps Software Factory, you can expect to learn and use your skills all throughout your journey. You come here, you get baselined, and then you immediately get paired with an industry expert, and you immediately get after a Marine specific problem to solve. You provide tangible warfighting value to the fleet. And while you are doing it, you are matriculating through skill set levels that we have put in place. And there's a little bit of, you know, additional obligated service that's tied to that, as well as some advanced incentive pays, which we are working on really hard right now. But to address your question directly, should the Marines come here with a pre-existing technical competency? Well, okay. Yeah, at some point that does become minorly helpful. But what I am more interested in is your soft skills. Are you mature enough to be able to handle an environment like this? Do you have the grit? Are you emotionally intelligent? All the soft skills that are required that for working on a balanced, small balanced team in an extreme programming construct, that is hard work. Everything else can be taught to you. We just don't have the time to teach the soft skills to each individual applicant.
So one of the things I want to harp on here is, and we heard this earlier today, a couple other senior leaders were asking a similar question to the Army Software Factory, and their response was that the first step of their interview process was to analyze the soft skills. Right? Looking at someone's coding ability was way far down on the list, because again, if you don't know how to write Python or Golang or, you know, choose your language here, that there are a million resources that we can reach out and teach people those sorts of things. But if you if you don't work well with others, you don't know how to take direction well, and you can't, you know, support your fellow warfighter in this effort, you're not qualified to kind of come in here and be effective. Or at least if you do come here, it's going to be a problem for many folks from an efficiency perspective, from a personal management perspective. And so this is very similar to how the large tech companies will hire as well. As, you know, I'm going to keep harping on Google because Will was the moderator here. And of course, everybody knows how biased I am on that kind of stuff. But, you know, the tech skills are a part of a very large interview panel that is, you know, based on role related knowledge, general cognitive ability, your team building and your play well with othersness. And then that intangible sort of Googliness aspect is what Google does. But I think in the Marine Corps, we would just call that esprit de corps. And, you know, if you don't have that, you got bigger problems.
Yeah, that's very well said. I'm just, you know, let me take this as an opportunity to explain that, you know, the soft skills, absolutely important because of the size of the team. I mean, everything that you do here is solely based on teamwork, okay? But not only that, one of the disciplines, actually a couple of the disciplines, require you to engage with your customer early and often, failing fast, buying down that risk, burning it down. Mm-hmm. And if you cannot do that, you know, in an effective way, then your entire team is ineffective. So we do model our screening process off of what the Army has already done, which is heavily, heavily informed by, you know, industry best practices in an effort to help screen that out.
And like, let's not sugarcoat it. General Glavy is all about show value, results. Outcomes. Yep. Another way of saying this. And this is a 3-year pilot program. So obviously there is going to be a startup culture nature to it. There is going to be we need to show value or we go extinct. Those type, you know, again, with the right people and the right circumstances, which it sure seems like everything has been done to get that set up, those type of environments, like almost destined for success, as long as we can get the people and the attitudes right. Because if you've got people and attitudes and ecosystem and time and capability, which I think there is definitely the potential for all three of those, like that's what lightning in a bottle looks like.
Yeah, and I love the concept also of very purposefully choosing to stand on the shoulders of giants to this process, right? We've talked on this podcast about Marine One and Kessel Run, and now we've toured the Army Software Factory, and we're getting in to, you know, what is the Marine Corps Software Factory going to look like? And there's a lot of lessons, Charlie, that you're pulling from Army Software Factory and Air Force initiatives and stuff like that, too, that are really nice to see put in place, because there are so many lessons learned to developing teams like this, while at the same time, it's such a niche category. Like, there aren't a lot of DOD-level teams that are building software for each other. And yes, we can go to Silicon Valley and you know, we can go down the street here in Austin to talk to anybody about how they build the software team. It does not translate one for one into what needs to happen in a DOD space. So it's really cool to see the it's not joint, but it is joint, and that everybody is super helpful in saying, yeah, let's help staff this and get this off the ground as much as humanly possible, and information sharing.
Yeah, absolutely. The deputy SecDef, Dr. Kathleen Hicks, actually, I mean, this was her high priority in terms of establishing a DOD software software development ecosystem, something that's modern, something that compels the revamp of joint IT policies and standards. It's amazing to be a part of that effort.
Yeah, and not only is she pushing for that to happen, but I think what I'm seeing from all the different software factories within the DOD, just being here in Austin and seeing them interact, I'm excited about the fact that even though they're all kind of doing their own thing in their own silo, they're being pretty collaborative and working together to make sure that all of the things are happening and whatever lessons learned can be taken away are being taken away. So I'm really excited about the amount of collaboration even outside of the ecosystem that's set up here. Like, that definitely is that's a good sign. Okay, so we are going to transition quickly. Charlie, unless you had a final thought on the software factory, and I was going to go through kind of the bullets that I took away from General Todd, General Glavy, and Will Grannis. Chance for last comments? Are we good? Okay, so first bullet, and I think no one is going to be surprised here. General Glavy said, hey, the Marine Corps Software Factory must be tactical. We're going to have to make our own luck. Thoughts?
I mean, I don't think you have another option here, right? The Marine Corps itself is going to tackle problems that relate to supporting the warfighter and getting people to be more efficient. And don't get me wrong, while you say the word tactical here, I want to make sure the listeners understand we don't mean that everything that the Marine Corps Software Factory does is related to putting a warhead on a forehead or sending a round downrange in some way, shape, or form. I can tell you right now that one of the most tactical advantages that I can think of off the top of my head is maybe we should improve, I don't know, the leave approval process, or I'm thinking of
the ATO, or how we write fit reps, or probably needs to be a spectrum of all of these things.
Exactly.
And I don't think we can just pigeonhole this to only what we would call kind of like enterprise or business management type applications.
Correct.
Or only tactical. I think we should be solving marine problems. And I think that's kind of what he's saying a little bit with the make your own luck. Obviously, I'm ad-libbing a little bit off of what he put there, but I think that is, and that's about making results.
Yeah, so I want to, take this as an opportunity to bring out the fact that this is meant to be a complementary and supplementary effort to what Big A Acquisitions does, right? They're definitely not every software solution needs to be a POR. Not every software solution needs to be at the enterprise level. That being said, there definitely are some cases where it does deserve the rigor and the resourcing that only acquisition can provide. That being said, Marine Corps Software Factory is all about getting after, pulling that decision-making cycle for the commander to the left as far as possible. Whatever decision-making tools that he or she can utilize, that's, it's fair game. And, quite honestly, our body of work is available to the service. And you gentlemen hit it right on the head. It's not just tactical. We definitely have the ability to address multiple things.
And then the next bullet that I pulled from here is Lieutenant General Todd mentioned learning a lot about, as part of the Army Software Factory, he mentioned that one of the things that struck him was a lot of learning about their data, learning about the data, the lack of data, the lack of visibility to data, what the chain, he called chain, which I believe he was talking about data integrity and data validation, and then the access and then using it in real time. And another thing that he mentioned was essentially his hard problem to solve was how do we organize our data in such a way that we can make decisions in the enemy's decision cycle? And he's talking about tempo there. He's talking about our speed in relation to the enemy. How do we use our data and make a decision faster than the enemy is currently able to do?
Right. And, as Marines, this comes back to OODA loop, right? How do we take gigabytes and petabyte scale and turn that into some form of observe and orient so that we can then either use ML and AI to make a decision or have a human come in and interpret that meaningful, enhanced, metadata to make a better decision.
But the fact that they're talking about the data, and we're talking about a 3-star getting on a panel with Will Grannis and saying, we didn't know the data so much, we're learning the data much better now. That is definitely a good thing to hear. So the next bullet that I pulled out, speaking of Will Grannis, Will mentioned, again, Google CTO, mentioned feedback loops. And he said, hey, gentlemen, I know you're kind of hitting this a little bit, but the better and more fidelity and the quicker you get after your feedback loops, essentially hearing what your customers are having to say and acting on that is going to determine their success. And I thought, obviously, that is a key bullet. And I think we all know that. But the question is, are we using that?
Right. Yeah, I wrote that down too. That was a really good quote. He said, rapid iteration and feedback loops create great technology. And that's something that we can definitely leverage. And if you were to imagine like an X and Y axis, where the Y axis is risk and the X axis is time, the longer you take to develop your solution, you're incurring more risk, right? So the iteration and the feedback loops with the customer, it's a full contact sport. The more you do it, you're constantly keeping that risk down, and it gives you plenty of opportunities to get it right to their liking.
One of the things that I've been very impressed with so far in meeting everyone at the Army Software Factory and talking to the new folks that are going to staff up the Marine Corps Software Factory is that focus on the direct customer feedback. And, we use the term customer here in the very traditional product management sense of the word, but, are you talking to the people at the point of friction? Are you figuring out what the problem actually is and what's the fastest, simplest, dumbest MVP that you could put in front of them to get feedback on what's important? Because we've all heard the million horror stories, and I've talked to people today who are currently living through these horror stories of like, we were promised software 5 years ago. They're still in development, you know, still being paid, still doing the job. It's still in development, have delivered absolutely nothing. And it's great to see in real time walking around and talking to people that that is the absolute wrong thing, that that is not what's being implemented right now, not how they're developing these things. And we heard a story of a great piece of technology this morning that they went from hearing the problem for the first time to having an MVP in 90 days and then having it rolled to production for the entire Army force in 30 more. So 120 days from hear that there's a problem to we have solved it through software. Now, let that sink in to anybody in the procurement process listening to this podcast or anything like that. Like that's a big deal.
So two things I want to say. One, I want to define customer. Customer, because people get emotional about this. Customer is anyone who consumes your software. So don't be like, oh, I wear a uniform. Don't call me a customer. If you are a consumer of software, you are a customer.
I would even say if you consume the output of the software. You don't even have to consume the software, right? Like if you're reaping the rewards of said software in any way, shape, or form, you are a customer.
Okay, I think that's definitely fair.
I just mean like a commander may not be the customer of the software. It may be his logistics team or his supply officer or his armory officer or something like that, right? Like, but the commander cares about the outcome of that, even though he's not consuming that software.
Yep. And then the other thing, Kyle, I want to get, this is a Kyle specific question. Ooh. So you've done some of the softwares before.
I've written a line or two of code.
And I've heard a bunch of people say, oh, the DoD is so behind and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. That timeline you talked about, is that good concept to delivery for the mythical civilian world that is so far ahead of us?
Yeah, I mean, I said this morning to a couple people as well. I think there's this pervasive idea throughout all of the DoD that like the DoD is so far behind the curve and like we're doing things so backward, we'll never catch up to industry. And I think, again, people look at like Google and think it is this mythical unicorn of lollipops and rainbows. And I'm sure I just think about a piece of software and some AI program writes it for me and ships it to my inbox, right?
First day commit.
ChatGPT made this last night, right? Like these are all things that I think are misnomers where my day job is to meet with hundreds of customers every year and figure out how they're going to adopt technology in some way. A lot of that is software based or software modernization in some way, application modernization in many ways. And I think that these are the same consistent problems that we see across the board. I think if you go from hearing about a problem to having a rolled out solution to the problem in 120 days, that is lightning speed. That is a Lamborghini going down the racetrack in sixth gear, wind blowing your eyelids open, you know? That is incredible. I very recently, like in the last 24 hours, just rolled out a brand new software package that my team at work built. It took us more than 120 days to go from iteration to thing, and we move real quick, and we
and
have
you
all
know
the tools.
Software.
And I know
and
how
you
to
do
this. Yeah, exactly. So I'll say 120 days gets my seal of approval.
Okay, so the next bullet I have, Lieutenant General Todd mentioned soldiers and Marines knowing what we are asking for. So what he's saying is that is a key to success is what he's saying. And the Marines, the soldiers on the ground know what they need. We need to make sure that we're doing a good job, not only coding for what they need, but make sure that the requirements process is able to properly adopt this so that we have, I believe the inherent thing he's trying to say here is so that we have the required sustainment and resources, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I know we've done several podcasts where we've talked about, you know, big R requirements, and definitely that is something that if you're part of the software factory and you're not kind of like talking to your CD&I brethren and making sure mm-hmm. we're working through that, I think that was a very astute catch by him of like, hey, we're not just coding in a vacuum. Let's make sure we've got the requirements process, not only part of it, but also requirements process adapting as well. We can't just say every process is legacy and we're going to code around that. We need to adapt our processes as well as our software coding.
I'll even add something into this too. And Charlie, I'm interested to get your feedback on this, which is I can't stress this enough. If you know how to write software, it is incredibly easy to write software. Like it truly is. What's really hard is maintaining software, right? Like I can go write something that is dirty and terrible that I know needs to be improved in an afternoon if I need to, but how do I productize that, roll that out to production, run it at scale, be able to support my users, be able to support the security fundamentals that go along with that, right? I can write some terrible software just so to be very clear about the board. It's never going to pass security inspections. So that aspect of, yeah, we can solve problems, but how do we solve those problems at scale, right? A corporal makes the world's best supply piece of software. I don't know, I'm just picking something out of thin air here, but you can't roll that out to 15,000 users in the Marine Corps without a whole lot behind it, right?
That's true. That's true. A lot of the, everything that you talked about in that chain happens all under one roof. And that is a magic of the software factory. That's what puts the word factory in the title. It's repeatable processes that can scale. And I also want to add that the operational experience that you talked about, that is actually the one of the biggest reasons why we are going after establishing an organic software development capability, because these Marines will bring that operational experience with them, and you know, ideally across all ranks, all MOSs, you know, and multiple different backgrounds, because you want that diversity of experience to be able to inform the solutions engineer.
And to follow up with what you're saying, to make sure that we're all tracking, you're talking about the Marines that are going to come here to Austin to code things were Marines before. So they're bringing their experience, their understanding, et cetera. That's what you're talking about, right? Okay, excellent. All right, next thing that was brought up, Lieutenant General Todd mentioned the gap, you know, minding the gap and all that. And he said, the gap is the pace at which we can field the most relevant equipment, obviously software in parentheses there. Soldiers need to be opportunistic to affect change. Scaling is our ultimate problem. And I think Kyle started to talk about that. The funny thing is, I think he was talking about scaling of personnel, or at least that's a context that I took from his announcement. But ironically, I think scaling might be another one of their ultimate problem, like scaling people in the Army to do things, both scaling people to write software and scaling people to, you know, conduct land wars or do assessment or whatever thing we currently need to do to satisfy the mission. Scaling is going to be important. But also scaling of our software is going to be a thing as well, because when we really start to see this stuff hit, when we see what he talked about of being able to use the data and all of that kind of stuff, that will definitely be a challenge that we'll run into eventually.
Yeah, and I heard him talking about that gap as well, and took that as the, hey, I've got a great idea. It's going to take me 2.5 years to get this to market. And that gap between I have the great idea now and when it goes to market, and what's changed between now and then, and is there a system in place in how we build software or build these systems that can address those changes in assumptions as we go, right? We don't want the feedback loop or the agile sprint, if you will, just to, you know, hit the nail directly on the head here, to be a 2-year sprint, right? We want those sprints to be weekly, bi-weekly, whatever you want to call it, where we're learning as we go and we're validating those assumptions through direct feedback with the end user, with the customer.
Next bullet, this one was from Will again. So he said, tech needs to mirror the capability you have in your personal life, and the further the chasm between the two, what you have available at home and what you have available to work, is going to lower your adoption rate. I thought that was pretty interesting, and I feel like I've experienced that. I don't know if I've heard people talking about that before.
It's a great point. Like, how much capacity do you have to learning a new way of doing things, living multiple lives, basically, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and on the tech side of this, the commander of the Army Software Factory this morning described it as sort of, you know, the Alexa generation of users who come in, and while yes, they know how to use a keyboard to get things done, like the keyboard's not their default. And the example, I've talked about this before, and as I talk about him, he walks by the window we're recording in, which I think is hilarious. One of the advantages of recording on site is that, okay, how do you check the weather right now? Like, if you wake up in the morning and you want to check the weather, how do you do it, John?
I go to weather.com.
Weather.com. How do you do it?
I have an iPhone, so okay. I just go to the weather app.
All right. So I'm going to challenge you all here and call you a little bit of dinosaurs. I ask Alexa. I say, what's the weather, right? I don't touch anything. I speak it into the ether of the world, and a computer replies back to me and says, Kyle, it's 42 degrees outside because you live in Denver, and it's cold, and you should wear a jacket. Do you want to know the 10-day forecast? And so think about that in retro, right? You can, I can open my phone, and with 3 or 4 clicks, I can have the weather up. And before that, what would you do? You open the newspaper, right? You'd turn on the news on television at specific times, and you'd find the weather that way.
There used to be a phone, when I was growing up, there was a phone number you would call. And they would tell you the weather and if school was closed.
Right. And so I think while this may be a silly example, it is sort of the how do you approach your users where they are and mimic personal life, right? And while I don't think that we need to be like, Alexa, launch Fire Mission or anything like that, right? but maybe you do want to have some sort of like, Alexa, where's the status of my trouble ticket? Where's my ATO process right now? And have some way, you know? And if you can accomplish that, it's not necessarily the fact that you can ask Alexa what the status of your ATO is. It's that you've got a system in place where that information can be delivered in such a quick way and in such a powerful way that it makes it fit into the fabric of your life.
Absolutely.
I completely agree. Okay, last bullet that I have. So this one was from General Glavy. He said, hey, we've got a lot to learn from Google, especially the best ways to use data. And yes, those guys know how to use data. I think in some cases to scaringly, terrifyingly scary results. So it would be great if someday we were referred to as terrifying and scary good at using data.
Sure.
Making sure the good at using data part is tagged on
there.
Being yes.
Terrifyingly
yeah.
anything, but sure.
Terrifyingly good.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. Yeah. Once you start being terror at anything, things are going to get a little strange. I think that how we leverage our data is a very difficult problem to solve. Data is everywhere, right? We talked about the personnel management system and like assigning a Marine orders in the system requires data from 12 different databases. That's the metric that I heard this morning. That's incredible. And none of those databases are connected, right? And that is one micro problem in a very macro situation across the entire Marine Corps. You know, how many different data sets do we think we have throughout the entire Marine Corps that we could consolidate at some point? I bet that number is in the thousands in some way, shape, or form, right? It's certainly not in the low hundreds or dozens. It's way bigger than that. And so you've got to get thousands of people who are managing that data to operate on the same API or integrate. And I think that we have this, and this is a fundamental problem that I hear throughout all of the industry, is we're just going to take all of our data and we're going to migrate it into the data warehouse, right? Or into the data lake. Yeah, the data ocean, or maybe it's a weekend.
The mythical data place where all the data gets fixed for you.
Yeah, exactly, right? And it's like, well, have you ever tried to take two data sets and combine them? It's not a simple process, and nothing works the way you think it's going to when it's all said and done. So I don't think that there's the great data lake house in the sky or whatever. I think that we've got to figure out how to just map that data, have a data dictionary and map those schemas so that we understand, hey, there's a consistent API for accessing data. It doesn't matter where that data is. And if you move it tomorrow, that's cool. You just update the API. The API knows where it's at. That's how you would do these things in the civilian sector, I think. But also realize this problem is absolutely pervasive in the civilian sector as well. Finding your data is just hard, but then how do you use that data and make decisions about it is even more difficult, right? And take the fact that ChatGPT came out 7-8 months ago now or something like that, uses the combined knowledge of the internet to answer questions. Like, that's terrifyingly good. It's also terrifyingly bad. But, you know, leveraging even the most basic sets of our data is powerful. And I think is a worthwhile goal to strive for, knowing we'll never actually get there.
Yeah, ideally government-owned as well.
Okay. So, Charlie, we are getting pretty close to time here. Want to give you a chance to put any final thoughts, maybe something we missed or last comments you want to get in?
No, I just want to say thanks for having me on. This was a tremendous opportunity. It's great to have you guys here to sit in the same room. This has been something that I've been wanting to do for a while.
Totally.
But I believe we have another episode coming up to go in further detail.
Yes. Thunderstealer. Yep. So I was going to mention, hey, so this is the Reaction Cast. I don't want anybody to feel unsatisfied, like we didn't explain the software factory enough, all in good time. So we will get, where do you need to go to resources? Who do you need to talk to? All of that stuff. That'll all be covered in the next cast. We'll put some stuff in the show notes for you in the meantime, but just know there's going to be another cast that's going to deep dive into all of this stuff. We just wanted to get the information from the fireside out as quickly as we could so that everybody knew that this was a thing. Be ready to listen to our cast having Charlie back on. And then we're also going to have the director of the Army Software Factory so that you can hear directly from them kind of how they got there and then some of the goodness that the Marine Corps is going to bring. So we're really excited to bring that cast to us, but we all know what time it is.
Ooh.
It is time for Kyle's hot take.
All right. I want to call out a couple things that I've seen today because I think today is a hot take day for me of just learning things left and right. And walking through the Army Software Factory this morning, I was blown away by how modern it felt. I shouldn't have been shocked by this. It's a brand new facility with brand new people doing a brand new concept. But it felt like walking through the office of a tech business or like walking through a Google office. Like it was, there was a lot going on in there and people were, you know, I didn't see a green Connex box anywhere. It was just the things that I assumed walking into a Marine Corps software factory or an Army software factory, a military software factory. What I saw was Dell monitors on stands and a bunch of people clacking away. And I saw code like on people's screens that people were working inside of VS Code and all these other toolkits. And I was like, holy crap, this is amazing. And it's important for all of us to take a quick step back and realize that this is net new for the DoD. This is new territory for all of us. And General Glavy said this on the announcement that just went out there. And General Todd was right there with him backing this thing up too, which is that we're going to have to adapt and we're going to have to educate ourselves and we're going to have to enable people with knowledge, especially, and they both called this out, you know, selflessly, in the older generation of leadership.
They did.
General Todd used this great analogy of, you know, he really prefers his analog cockpit to the new all glass digital cockpit. And that is worth calling out, right? We know what we know. And so many of us, and I'm saying this now, I'm about to turn 40, which just makes me feel dated as hell. But so many of us are, you know, our synapses crystallize over time, right? I've talked to people all the time where I feel like their synapses crystallized when VMs were still cool. And we're evolving as an industry, as a business, as a DoD, as a warfighting agency. And we got to just remember, and I know we say this all the time, but stay flexible out there, right? Stay agile in the non-project management sense of the word. How are you going to make sure that you're staying up to date on what is the realm of the possible so that you can map that to the realm of reality that I walked through this morning, which is a big deal.
Dear listeners, thank you for joining us. You can connect with us on social media by going to Twitter and following at @USMC_TFPHOENAX. That's at @USMC_TaskForcePhoenix. Our editor is Sarah Clarkson. Thank you so much for getting a quick turn on this. You are the best. And marketing support is provided by Jake Osborne. You can support the cast by going to Apple Podcasts and leaving us a 5-star review and accompanying comment, which you have not been doing a good job with. I need you to do more of that. And with that, we are out.
Later from South by Southwest.